town you never heard of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
The podcast.
We're waiting for you.
For the people, by the people? Is that what we're waiting on?
That's what it is.
All right.
That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Seems like you're always saying that.
I don't know. It just kind of, it ended up being like a natural thing.
Okay, so we're on location, guys, and Ben and I are sharing a mic, so we're not making out.
Yeah.
Yet.
If you see us on camera, it just looks really weird.
A couple more mules, cowboy, and the banquet beers over there.
So there's a little bit, you can definitely tell, I think if you listen to our podcast, you'll tell there's a little bit different sound here, because we are on location.
Yes, we are.
We decided to travel this weekend.
I'm excited. This is our first leg of the road trip, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. We've talked about this for a while.
We have. We've been trying to get these guys cornered for a while, and then I almost blew it, you know, running a little late, but got in. I got in, though, so...
I thought we were going to have to arm wrestle. Like, we were wanting to come down to your guys' place, and you guys were wanting to come up here, and it's like,
hey, you guys
flip a quarter for it or something.
Still welcome to come out, you know?
We need to.
Yeah, that'd be good.
For sure. So, you want to, where are we at? First of all, let's talk about where we're at.
We're in the Irish capital of Nebraska.
You've always said that. It's the Irish capital.
Did you not see the big clover?
Yeah.
It's a landmark. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't see it last time we came here.
It's like, oh, where's that restaurant? It's like, oh, it's 2 blocks east of the Shamrock.
Yeah. Okay, Shamrock, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Do they paint that every year?
Yeah.
So it's a dyed concrete is what
Yeah. Okay, because I wondered. It was a little faded.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it looked retro. Like, yeah. I liked it.
It's dyed and then...
They do paint it a couple times a year
Okay. Before
St. Pat's. We get all the kids out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
gets
okay.
to paint it a little bit.
And Lock then the highway off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Give out free dilly bars and pop and stuff like that.
No, it's quite the landmark. No, it's really good. Plus, what's that other town that likes to lay claim to it, but you guys are way out in front.
I'm not.
There is no other town.
There's,
okay,
there's
okay,
no
okay,
other
yeah,
town
okay,
to mention.
No
that's
other
what I thought.
Town. Okay.
So, as Andy pointed out, we're in O'Neill, Nebraska. So, we're almost 4 hours north of home.
Yes, we are. Well, for me, it's like a half hour south of town.
Of where you grew up. Yeah, we're getting back to your old stomping ground. We're pretty close to South Dakota, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you guys go up to South Dakota a lot to hang out, go up to the lake there.
Yep. Go up to Fort Randall. That's, mm-hmm. 50 miles to the boat ramp, Mike.
Yeah, just a short hour drive.
Yep.
Nice. So we are at Handlebend, and for folks who have been listening to the podcast for a long time, they'll recognize that name. We got to know these guys via social media and email and just chatting back and forth a couple of years ago when we first started the podcast. And if folks listen closely, they'll hear when we at our studio,
mm-hmm.
when we take a little drink with our guests at the end of the podcast, we bust out the secret area and in there, folks can see on the YouTube video, we've got these two custom cups that they made for us that fit just perfectly in our little spot there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all kind of coming full circle. So here we are. This is where these things are made. So we're here to talk to both Michael and Matt, who founded the company and own the company and do a lot of the work here as well, as we've seen. So just to learn a little bit again about, you know, small town America, small town entrepreneurs, Nebraska entrepreneurs, a couple of young guys, you know, trying to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan and I came up here, what was it, like a month ago or so? Somewhere in that range? A
couple months, yeah.
A couple months just to have a little trip, have fun, got to know the guys a little bit better, toured the facility.
Yeah.
You'll get a tour when we get done here, so you can check it out as well.
Very good, very good.
But a lot
your
of...
guys' anniversary, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, it was. Yeah, so that was May. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of cool things going on. So just looking forward to this interview. So how do you want to start, Andy? You got anything particular or you want us to kick it off?
Well, I remember Matt from a few years ago. I interviewed you at the grain, right?
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
And that was for because we just put in internet fiber, right?
Yeah.
High speed internet there. And I was working for Three River Telco doing some stuff for them, or Three River Communications, when they were expanding their fiber optics. And I mean, I just thought about that, you know, that interview and talking about you know, you need internet. If you're going to be trading grain,
right.
You know, yeah. You need to be on top of it. So
no, I'm just putting that together in real time right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There you go. All right. There you go. I was wondering if you remember that. And I mean, I do a number of things, right? But it also goes to what you were talking about, small town. This isn't just all and everything you do. This is just one of the things you guys do.
Yeah, and that's the reality of small business, man, mm-hmm. is making things work.
Yep.
Maybe let's start with, first of all, I guess we'll just let each one of you talk a little bit about it. Where did you grow up? Kind of what's that story, and how do you guys know each other? And then eventually kind of get into the point where this idea started coming together. So who wants to start?
I'll kick that one.
All right, so we'll start with Matt.
Because right. He's kind of a transplant here.
Okay.
I've been here right. longer than he has.
All right, so. There you go.
Probably not actually an OG.
Yeah.
Wow. He's from that other town.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. We're not going to talk about it. That I other remember, Irish town? No?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I remember when we graduated, there, like on graduation day, there was a special award, and there was like, I think in our class of 75, there's like 13 kids that were in O'Neill Public Schools for 13 years. And I just remember like never feeling like such an outsider, like not getting that award.
Nice.
Yeah. So, so my family moved here actually for grain merchandising and grain elevators. I am fourth generation in grain merchandising. So my dad bought a couple Holt County elevators in the 90s. And so I moved here when I was in the Page and O'Neill area when I was five. So, and then continued in that trade through college. I went to Nebraska Wesleyan for a couple years, thought I was gonna maybe make a go at playing football, found out pretty quick that my body couldn't hold up to that. So then I transferred to UNL and graduated from UNL. But Michael actually moved into O'Neill, what is it, fifth grade?
Yeah, it was the summer between fifth and sixth grade year.
Yeah, so.
So all those awesome stories from like growing up, and that would be another podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not so, for today.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I found out the summertime is the worst time to move as a kid, because you like land in town, you get like 6 weeks. It's like maybe the only summer I couldn't wait for school to start, because I like didn't know anybody. Just rode my bike around by myself all day.
Yeah.
Finally made some buddies out at recess on the football field. And yeah, Matt and I have been grade school buddies, junior high buddies, high school buddies, college roommates. We've gotten in fist fights, fought over girls, built a lot of cool stuff, thrown parties together.
Yeah.
Kind of done it all.
Yeah. Okay, that's the stuff I'm talking about. There you go. Like, I mean, you stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been walked to the principal's office by teachers after knocking over a bunch of chairs in a little classroom brawl. And
yeah.
All kinds of good stuff.
Do you think when you guys were, you know, that young, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, whatever it was, that you knew, like, this is one of my best buddies, like someday we're going to do something together?
I mean, we were adolescents, like some days you probably felt that way. Yeah. Some days, like I hated the guy.
Well, we were constantly, if it was like, I mean, between go-karts and random projects in the shop, we were building something.
We were always building stuff. Yeah,
but I, you know, I don't, as far as like a business venture, that I don't think that ever, crossed my mind at that point. No,
we just we were literally always building something. We were like building the sets for the, like Matt and I were the guy that the one act department, like we'd go build sets for him, and
at
like in high school and stuff.
Oh, gotcha. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
We were just always doing that kind of stuff, building go-karts and mm-hmm. tearing stuff apart, like fixing each other's pickups, and
yep,
just always hanging out, you know.
Yeah,
small town boy
shit. I really like these guys and their mindset, because you know, I was at an even smaller school, right? Lynch Public. Mm-hmm. And it was very finite, the different classes that you could sign up for. But I figured out when I was a freshman, if I just did all these classes that I hate my freshman and sophomore year, get them out of the way, I could spend like the entire day down in the shop doing welding, advanced welding, woodworking too. And, yeah. I, the, and that's how I had it my whole senior year. after lunch, I was just down in the shop the whole freaking day.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty good senior year.
Yeah, well, it really was. I mean, I didn't want to go to college because I was having too good of a time.
I think we had an early out offering, and then like our senior year, they put in late start as an option too. So if you had all your credits done, and that was the first year they launched late start, but they hadn't. We were like the guinea pigs, so there was like a bunch of us that took late start and early out.
Yeah,
and then like the year two, there was a rule made that you could only have one or the other.
There's a loophole there that you found. Yeah.
You guys beat me.
But where does that come from? Like your parents, your dads, or what? I mean, just working with your hands and getting. I mean, if you.
Yeah, I mean,
figure
both,
it out. Yeah,
both our dads are entrepreneurs, so like we were fortunate enough to watch those two guys.
Yeah.
Our entire lives build their businesses. So that's not very many people have that.
And
I think it's that. Oh, go ahead.
I just imagine like what you were saying, watching your parents work, your dad work. You know, when you buy a house, oh, there's always something to do, right? Mm-hmm. Something needs fixed. Yeah. Take that times, what would you say, 100 million when you buy an elevator?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's always something broke that needs
repair. A lot of duct tape, bailing wire. I mean, these things were 1960s elevators, man. Like,
oh, I know.
Yeah.
They got that one in Lynch running again.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's crazy. Wow. See, there's videos on Facebook with that thing. It's, yeah, we'll have to check that out.
I think another piece I'll add to that, what Matt said, you know, I think a little bit of it's the era we grew up in, right? Like, our sector of this generation, right? Like us, you know, we've grown up with technology, and like back in the day, it was like way before it. Like Game Boy was like iconic when it came out, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, like that was back in the day when the baseball field had 20 bicycles laying on the street curb every day of the summer. Yeah. And like, you just had to go make your own fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we grew up in that era where you just became more inventive. And then I also think that that's just part of like rural America too. Like if you're in the city, there's obviously like the bowling alley or the arcade or those kinds
of things. Laser tag, go-karts, all that.
See, and that's me. Yeah. That's where I was. You know, like we've been together since we were in high school, 16. And he's the one that kind of introduced me to rural, that area. I lived in a neighborhood. It just, that's how it was. But yes, you guys all align, all four of you. I'm kind of that one. But I kept thinking maybe it's a girl thing, but there's got to be girls that are like you guys too that work with your hands a ton. It's just, I wasn't shown that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
honestly, we did have fun going to Funplex and, you know, all the water parks and stuff, but it's nothing compared to what you guys were talking about.
Yeah, we were like, we were like robbing the ski rope out of the neighbor's boat, like figuring out how to tie it to somebody's bike and run around on skateboards or rollerblades behind them, you know?
I think I probably back then was like, oh my God, those hillbillies.
Yeah, oh yeah, you were. Sure. You were for sure.
I totally
for sure.
was. So, you know.
God dang, that reminds me of my Ford Tempo, my first car I ever bought with money from mowing yards. By the time I was a third grader through seventh grade, I made enough money at $20, $40 a pop to buy my
That's
car.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Two-door or four-door model?
Two-door. Oh, it was a coupe. Two-door. Oh, but it hadn't
frugal,
run.
You're a frugal man.
Yeah, yeah.
No frivolities.
It was a, it hadn't run for a couple of years. So we thought, you know what would be kind of fun is if we took the hood off of that and used the ski rope and pulled that behind a four-wheeler.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe, some of those dudes, they're still around.
That's amazing.
We're still walking, I guess.
They made it.
They made it. I took kids back from college, you know, from California. I'm like, you think you watch this. I just remember I was going some ungodly speed on this four-wheeler, right, pulling this kid from California on an upside-down Ford Tempo, a hood, through this past year. And he's just having the time of his life, just smiling, and the tumbleweeds were just gathering up on him. He just looked like a big old tumbleweed.
That's awesome.
Ridiculous.
I guarantee you that guy still remembers that.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Yep.
And he's never coming back.
No.
We one and done.
We took care of that, He transferred out.
So you guys were saying that that you guys went off to college together. Like, was that intentional? Did you guys go, like, get a dorm, or how did that all come together?
No, so I moved out here, like Matt said, between fifth and sixth grade. And then when we graduated, I actually went to a small college, and tried my hand at football, played a couple years of football.
Okay.
Unlike Matt, so I was kind of blessed to be a quarterback, so I spent my whole career in a red jersey, never getting touched. you know, in practice or whatever. And it just got to a point, I think after sophomore year, after two seasons, I kind of was putting the pieces together. I watched Matt go through some disc problems freshman year and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I've played 8 years of football or 7 years of football and like still have my knees and elbows and back and shoulders. Like, and then there was like a girl that's kind of chasing down the Lincoln too. So it's time to hang it out.
So that's the real story.
Yeah.
So it was like the football thing was like a justification, but junior year of college, we both transferred into the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Gotcha. And that was when we got the old bachelor pad and lived together the last 2 years.
So you guys obviously stayed close when you left high school, because you guys went to a couple of different colleges to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I was running from Fremont down to Lincoln like every Thursday night, hanging out Friday through Sunday with Matt and, you know, old buddies and stuff.
Nice. So what did you guys study in, or would you end up graduating with, I assume?
Yeah.
Both general business degrees from CBA at UNL.
Yep. Nice. Yeah. So then, like, so what's next? You get done with school, and then what happens? You've got, excuse me, so you chased this girl to Lincoln. I assume that worked out.
Yeah, that's my wife. Yeah.
I figured you probably weren't talking about some other rando. So you get done with school, and
I still tell her to this day I got game.
Yeah.
It worked.
I'm sure. So once you guys get done with school, what happens? What do you guys do?
So I took a job merchandising grain in Omaha for a kind of a startup that was trading mostly single car and 27 car units from Iowa, Nebraska area to the PNW. So I stayed and I did that for 2 or 3 years. And then my dad finally got to a point where it was time that it was either I was going to come back or he was going to sell. And so I moved back and started helping him in O'Neill. And then at that point, I moved my wife back with me at that point. So she moved from Omaha to O'Neill when I moved.
Did you guys meet in college too, or was that?
So I actually met her through Michael. So Michael originally is from Norfolk, and Tracy, my wife, is from Hayter, which is 7 miles outside of Norfolk. So.
So Tracy's, Matt's wife's little brother, was like one of my best childhood friends growing up, really good buddy of mine. And so like camping up at Fort Randall and stuff, like it was just one big crew. And
nice.
Yeah. So you guys knew each other as kids too.
Right. Yeah.
So you moved back to O'Neill like 3 years after college-ish, you said, right?
Yeah. 3 years probably. Okay. Yep.
And so then how did it go down for you, Michael?
So graduated with a business degree from Nebraska. And then I had like in the summers, we always came home for the summers, like in college, and would work back here and do the slow pitch softball thing and party with old buddies and stuff. And that whole drill, but that sounds nice on the,
yeah, that's a good, yeah. Mm-hmm. That good little
like a beer
echo in here. Yeah.
It's like a beer commercial.
Normally it's Andy over here. I like to give him a hard time if you can't tell.
So, yeah. So then when I was back in the summers, I'd work with my dad. He's a commercial refrigeration and HVAC guy by trade. That's been his whole career. And, over the course of my 4-year degree, like figuring out, that's kind of the whole point of a business degree, right? It kind of leaves everything open. Kind of figured out I like the lifestyle dad had. Like he's in a different town every day. Like, you know, all the grocery store owners become friends. Like you show up, something's broke, you leave, it's fixed. Like it's just a nice lifestyle, right? And it kind of affords you the opportunity to live anywhere. So through my 4 years at UNL, I had decided I thought I was going to chase that route, I guess. So I went back through, when I graduated from Nebraska, went out to Milford to Southeast and went through the HVAC program as a formality, I guess. Matt calls it my master's degree in refrigeration. Yeah.
So, doesn't that take a while?
It is an 18-month program. Yeah. Okay. So we were doing the whole, that was, my wife and I got married like 2 months after we graduated college. So we got, by today's standards, pretty young. So we were living in an apartment. She was in LPS. No, she was in the Waverly School District. Sorry. We were living in Lincoln and I was just commuting out to Milford and back and doing that whole jam. So then we lived down there right at 5 years in Eagle, Nebraska, and had our first little kid. It was his first birthday, and we were like, we had made the decision that when it's time to start raising kids, we want to get back home to rural Nebraska. And she had a job open up, and we moved home right on my firstborn's first birthday.
Wow.
So it was a while before you came back to O'Neill.
Yeah, I was kind of say that? Like I don't know the exact number, but like during and after college, we were down in the Lincoln, Omaha area for 10 years.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay, so then you come back, and obviously you guys have stayed in touch. At what point do you guys start thinking like, man, I think we should start thinking about starting a business? Like, was this the first idea, or was there another idea, or did it like everything kind of develop from there?
No, it's way slower than that. So Michael made the first mug when we were in college.
And I feel like, I think you're kind of touching on this too, that the HVAC thing,
yeah,
kind of plays into this whole thing. So we're going to get into obviously what you guys do here, but yep. I feel like that kind of plays into it.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So when we both ended up in Lincoln, finished out junior, senior year of college and lived in like a bachelor pad with a few buddies and Matt and I together. And we were still building stuff, you know, every day after class, sometimes at home during class, weekends. We built these, I don't know where we ever came up with it, but we built these big like carpeted platforms. So we had like a row of three couches and then another upper deck row of three couches. So like everybody that lived in the house could lay on their own couch for like watching movies and playing video games and stuff, built beer pong tables, just all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we had this bachelor pad, and this would have been like the mid 2000s, like 2007 ish, yep, probably. And the Moscow Mules, it seemed like they were like, I mean, it's obviously an old cocktail, right? But I feel like it was coming back in pop culture. Like all the bars downtown were
very trendy.
Yeah, you had like leave your ID to get the copper mug and stuff. And so we needed, I mean, rightly so, a set of copper mugs for our pad. And this would have been back before like Amazon, I think, just mostly sold books and stuff. Like eBay was like the online commerce deal.
Right.
So like cruised eBay to find the best deal possible and spent like $40 a mug on these like chintzy little mugs. Waited all week for them to show up in the mail. And they showed up and they're not even copper. They're like stainless steel, you know. Yeah. And so we shelled out probably $150 for them in the college days. So we just boxed them up and returned them, refunded them or whatever. And I was back home for a weekend, maybe months later or something that winter. And, you know, there's just kind of a never ending scrap copper pile with my dad and, and his line of work.
Of course,
Just kind of started dinking around on a Saturday and getting a mug knocked out. And it took, you know, most of the day Saturday, and then it still had like one little leak. So I came back Sunday and like dinked around with it most of the day Sunday. And
what was the drink you put in it?
It would hold like a whole bottle of vodka. It was huge. Oh, yeah. It was massive. It was definitely like a college, bro somewhere? Move. It's around. Oh, we've got, I think I got the other three up there, which is another piece of the story. But that's awesome.
That's the Moscow Mule that the Vikings would have.
Yeah, like that's that. Right. Yeah. Or like if you're going to be in a bar fight, like that's the one you wanted.
That's Thor's. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had that. I had that mug. And then Matt, you know, we were always doing stuff together and he wanted mugs. And I'm like, man, this thing was a pain. Like, you got to come home and build your own. So we came home a weekend and built him a set of four. And then that was kind of the party pad mugs. And that was really it. Like, everybody wanted them. Everybody thought they were cool. And we were just kind of like, no, these are ours, you know. Kind of guarded them with our life. They're always trying to walk out the door of the place.
I bet. Yeah.
Like the Stella's glasses, you know, those would always grow legs too.
So you guys were still in Lincoln at that time when you did that.
Yep.
So then, I mean, it was how many years later was it that you decided we're going to go ahead and found this company and get things rolling?
Yeah. So like, I had a set. Michael still had the huge Viking mug.
Thor.
Yeah. And so then he needed three more to complete his set. So then we were back another weekend building those. And then we just kind of toted those around to different places. And then we hit that period where everyone was getting married. All our friends were getting married. And we're in like,
after we graduated,
you know, six different weddings a summer. And so we'd have for our really good friends that both Michael and I were in the weddings for, we would build them, we'd come home for a weekend and build them a set of mugs. And so over that next couple summers, we had sets in Denver, we had sets in Houston, Salt Lake City, Omaha, Lincoln, and that's when we really started getting like feedback, like, hey guys, like, we're hosting with these, everybody loves them, they want them, like, I think you could basically name your price and sell these things if you wanted to. So that's so that we got that feedback. And then,
so that would have been, just for a timeline, we graduated college in 2008. That would have been like 2008 through say 12 or 13 or something that we were giving them as gifts.
And gotcha. Then, yep.
Let's say 2012 or 13 through 2017 is when we officially launched the website.
Okay.
So basically that like 4 years was us being like, no way. Like, we don't need side gigs. Like,
right. Yeah.
There's no, like, these things take 4 man hours to build. There's no way we could ever scale it or charge enough for them. Or,
at that point, are you still just using cast off copper from your dad's business?
That's what I was going to ask.
100%.
We're using mostly plumbing copper at that time. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. There's no refrigeration.
Like, have some returns after this.
Disclaimer, podcast. Wash before use.
Yeah.
So you didn't have much of an investment yet.
No,
at that point, it was just totally kind of scrap, like, and like, yeah, his equipment to. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Is that what you,
it'd be technically brazing, but
brazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, same concept. Yeah, zero overhead at that point.
Yeah, I was still holding the handle with my, like, with a pair of pliers, and he was brazing
the torch. Mm-hmm. And then, like, yeah, you're on a workbench, so you can't get the backside, and like, I'd be running the torch across his arm or, yeah, you know, whatever. Mm. It's just, it was a pain in the butt.
OSHA wasn't welcome at that time.
No, it was just top secret stuff.
They don't need to know.
Yeah. Nah. So when I hear stories like this, it always makes me think of parents. Were your parents, yeah, do it, or like, what was their thought on it?
Well, not only that, I mean, at that point, were you guys both married?
Yeah.
So
17,
true.
We would have been.
Yeah. When we launched, were they supportive? Yeah.
Once,
yeah,
we launched the business.
So once, yeah, you started thinking about actually doing something, not only your parents, yeah, but were your wives like,
no, sure, I think this, everybody probably behind their like facial expressions thought we were totally
thought
idiots.
You were,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, we had good friends. We had good friends say, like, guys, like, no, yeah, probably a bad idea.
You know? Right.
A town of 3,000
people. I like the mugs. I, yeah, do. I do.
Can you make me a set? But right, please don't do this as a business.
Yeah, right.
Do, yeah, you think, as, you know, in looking back on it and just the mentality that you guys have and as entrepreneurs and stuff like that, when people said that to you, did that make you want to do it more? Or were you just like, oh, man, like, were you really second guessing things? Or?
And for me, I think we slow played this enough where we, you know, we had thought this thing through pretty good by the time, I mean, he made the first mug in 2007, 10 years later is when we put the website up. So, you know, we, mm-hmm, had plenty of time to kind of, we had even, before we even launched the website, we had spent some time figuring out how we're going to scale this thing a little bit. If, mm-hmm, we had to actually make some, yeah, like, not, mm-hmm, not a lot, but at least so they didn't take a whole weekend to build two mugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah, so that was probably a, like, when we decided and really leaned into it, I'm going to say it was probably 2015 or 16, because we spent more than a year, like, really leaning into how can we make more than, like, two mugs a day.
Putting together that business plan, mm-hmm, and all that kind of stuff, just,
yeah,
right, really getting your head wrapped around it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so at that point, the wives were maybe a little bit apprehensive because we're still working full-time jobs. So these were going to get built either in the evenings or the mornings. So
that's exactly what I was thinking. So then it's time away,
right,
from them. And then if you have littles,
right.
Right.
So that's such a hard balance.
It was, and,
yeah,
still continues to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I would agree. But
I think, well, so my next question I need to know, are you, to ask my next question, something I need to know is, are you guys still individually, do you have separate full-time jobs from the Handlebend organization?
Yes. Yep. Yep. Both of us do. We're still involved with our own businesses and our family businesses on the side of Handle Bend.
Yep. Yeah. So there's just there's a lot of like entrepreneurship going on there. And the reason I wanted to know that is because sometimes I wonder for, you know, for my own self, we, you know, came back home and started our business, and everything tells you to go ahead and start that side thing, you know, like kick that off, try to make it work. But don't quit what you're doing.
Right.
Like keep that alive, because you never know what's going to happen. I did the opposite.
Yeah.
I was so pissed at my full-time job, but I wasn't an entrepreneur. I was working for somebody. I was under their thumb all the time. Yep. You know, like I didn't have much flexibility at all. And I just freaking quit and went and started it. And sometimes I wonder, would it have been smarter? Would we be better positioned today if I had did it differently? I don't know if you guys have ever given that any kind of thought. Like, do you ever look back and say, hey, this or that, should I have done it this way? But it's a little bit different for you guys also, I think, because the other stuff that you do is also entrepreneurial ventures, you know?
Right. If we were in your scenario, Ben, I think it would have been kind of the same thing. We would have, you know, kind of dove into it harder, faster at the start. But I'll tell you, it's been pretty beneficial, I think, to Handle Bend and the way we've set this thing up to run it, especially in the early years when we didn't have a big payroll, that we kind of just were able to make decisions like we didn't need the money. And so
right. Yep.
That is pretty valuable when you're starting a company.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you talk about like the ripple effect. Like there's no way without that, say 3 or 4 year head start of that mentality, like where this thing that, you know, might have been without that mindset.
Well, that's Ben, you hate money and back to it all the time. Like if we could just do things based on making the best decision, what would get us further ahead, not based on surviving, you know, paying rent, all those things that comes into play.
You can get in a jam in a real hurry. Yeah. And so I've thought about our side of that coin that you just asked, going back to your question. But I suppose like on your side, there's definite advantages to, you know, the way you did it. Like you just throw everything else, like chop everything off and you're going ham over here, like it's kind of like backing somebody in a corner, like you're ready to rock.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're ready to rock, and if we would have done that, I think we would have tried to scale faster sooner.
You know,
boots on the ground, more of a sales effort.
Yep.
Would have done things a little bit differently, for sure.
Yeah, so I think it kind of points out that there's not necessarily any one specific way to do it. Like it's not like this is definitely the way there, this is definitely the way, but you totally could make it work either way. But bottom line is you got to have that mentality.
Right.
You got to be ready to do some stuff.
You got to ready to go. And I it's kind of funny. I thought about this at the beginning of the podcast with the grain elevator thing, and it makes a lot of sense. Like I've watched Matt and his dad run these old 60s grain elevators, and it's like all hell breaks loose like on a Thursday afternoon, right? And it's like throw a patch on it, get it going, we'll fix it when we got time.
Yeah.
And like running this business is like,
yeah,
that's what it is. It's like every day, like something comes up every week, something comes up, and it's like you're just always like assessing, like, does this need fixed like all the way, or can we like patch it somehow and keep going over here where we really, you know? And it's just like
there's semis coming in. Yeah, the elevator's got to take the grain. That's
and I'm the one that's being like, hey, there's this problem. Can you add this to your list? There's this problem. And he's looking at me like, are you
it's like get in the back of the line.
How about you problem solve and not give me all your problems? Yeah. That's kind of our conversation. Yeah. So,
They're not getting any closer to making out right now, I can tell.
Couple more meals.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great story. I think that paints a good picture. One of the things I was going to ask you guys while we're on that topic, is there anything that if anybody's listening to this, that one piece of advice that you would give them, or that you would say, like, I wish I had known this, or I wish I had thought about this, when I was looking at starting a business, you know, and it just doesn't necessarily have to do with Handle Bend, but just with, you know, everything that you guys have done over your life so far, you know, with your parents and experiencing all these kinds of things. Is there anything that you can think of off the top of your head that would be beneficial for somebody like that?
I just told some people, we had a little tour of, it was like a Grow Holt County group, and they came through for a quick tour at the end of the day, and I was just talking to them, and I'm like, you know, I think a piece of entrepreneurship is, like, if you launch your first idea and it, like, makes it, right? Like, you're a one in a million. Like, you're so lucky, right? So that means that most of the time you're going to just be faced with so many, like, hurdles and so much adversity. And I think, you know, okay, for something to make it, like, in the entrepreneurship or small business world, like, number one, you have to have a good idea. But, like, there's no guarantee. Like, everybody also obviously thinks their idea is good. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, you know,
everyone thinks they have a good
so there's that. But then, like, you obviously think your idea is good. You might be the only one. You probably are the only one that thinks it's a good idea at the inception of your business, right? Mm-hmm. Or of your venture, because otherwise somebody else would have done it.
Yeah, good point.
And so you have to, like, and this is easy for me to say in the position we're in now, 7 years in, and, like, we've been running a fairly successful company. But you have to be able to figure out a way to live above, like, the noise, right? Mm. So I think that's pretty important. It's also very hard to sort out, like, in the moment and when you are holding stuff together, like, trying to make it all stay together at the seams. But I think that that's a important priority to put, like, front of mind when you're working through that real time.
So it's kind of like just keeping the faith on what you originally, maybe not necessarily what you originally set out to do, but the idea of what you originally set out to do, to be an entrepreneur, to make things work. And all the noise that you're talking about is just like all the random problems that come up and the people that say you can't and the things that show their face where you're like, gosh, dang it, man. Like, I could, because I've felt this, like, I could just go take a job. I could have that same paycheck every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I could have that number coming in that I know is coming in every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, I could get away from all of this, but just staying true to that, what you originally wanted to do, is that kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like kind of keeping, just like developing thick skin, I guess, and like problem solving. Like, at the end of the day, if you're launching, building or growing a company, all you're doing is problem solving, like every single day, all day long.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that,
Matt? No, just the faster you can wrap your mind around that and being persistent in that, the better you're going to be as far as your mindset, because that is what it is. And the noise Michael's talking about, we battle with it quite a bit. We talk about it almost weekly. Like, we could get 50 W's in a week, but man, those L's are so loud during the week. And I mean, they're just glaring, and they glare through our team too.
Right, right.
So, you got to stay above that noise. It's absolutely key.
And what are, like, is an example of an L, just like maybe a product coming back, someone did something wrong, or like big, I mean, it's big and small you're talking about?
No, big and small. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you got, when you're running a business like we have up front, which is a coffee shop and a tap room, you're directly serving the people you're seeing in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little bit harder.
A lot of
people
you grew up with.
Right.
So you could run into somebody at the grocery store and be like, oh, your employee didn't give me a smile today.
Oh, yeah. Or screwed up my drink or my burrito, or even something as simple as that.
Sheila said it was a double shot. I know it wasn't a double shot.
Okay, yes.
But, you know, those things are...
I'm just trying to give, like, an example
said,
for,
like,
people to...
Right. Yeah. But, like, if those things are, you know, at a ratio of 1 to 99, like, the one is the one you sit there and think about. Right?
It is.
You can lose a lot of confidence or whatever over those kind of things.
What do you guys think about, Morgan and I were actually talking about this on the way up here, because we had, you know, almost a 4-hour drive, and we're talking about our business and the things that we're running into. What do you think about the idea that, like, you don't really know who a company is or the company that you're dealing with, you know, and you talk about this, like, your people in town, you know, who experience you guys, you know, at the retail level out there, you don't really know who these people are and if they're really good until you have a problem with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'll learn a lot about, I mean, I've said this for a long time. You can, even on the farmer side and the grain merchandising, like you can nail it out of the park 100 times in a row. Mm-hmm. But the second you make a mistake or they think you made a mistake, they might be gone for a year, 5 years, mm-hmm. before they're knocking at the door again. You know,
and, I mean? And part of what I mean by that is like you make that mistake and you have that issue, and then how you handle that.
100%.
Then yeah. What those, because those individuals then get to see you in a completely different light, because yep. It's always like you just expect everything to work. You know, as a customer, mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, it just works. It works every time I go there. It's great. I love them, you know, whatever. But then when something really goes wrong, how that those folks handle it, that's when you secure kind of those customers for life.
Oh, 100%. You know what I mean? And I think that goes to say, like, if you screw up or even if something's out of your control, like, it literally doesn't matter what it costs. You just like get after it and fix it. Like go mm-hmm. over the top, you know, because
and
it's
admit it, right?
It's high, like, stakes, 100%. Yeah. It's high right. stakes. And even if you do that, just depending on the personnel you're dealing with, like you still might yeah. not recover, but like you have to get after it right now.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yep. I got a degree similar to you guys in business management and doubled down and got a marketing degree with it. And there's a couple of really cool stories in my like 300 and 400 level classes where I think it was a Mercedes broke down on a high roller, and it was between Las Vegas and LA, and Mercedes knew who this guy was. And they flew a helicopter out there, picked him up, dropped him off where he was supposed to be. And there was his Mercedes fixed. And he's like, no, that's a fix. That's a new car. That's not mine. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we just fixed up. You're good to go. And like he knew what the yeah. game was, but yeah. Mercedes knew how valuable that was. And just think about mm-hmm. that story. That happened in the 80s, and here I am telling that yeah. story,
right.
you know, that many years later.
That's big time.
So yeah, the cost of that helicopter ride, picking him up and just saying, hell with it, that's a lemon, get him a new one. Mm-hmm. Not only did he come back and buy who knows how many more Mercedes-Benz, you know,
right.
individually, but here I am. You know, telling the story.
And I guarantee you that guy, like, if he's still around, is like having a gin and tonic, like still telling his buddies
yeah.
you know, 40 years later about that story.
Yeah,
guaranteed.
Thank God my Mercedes-Benz broke down. I got a helicopter ride and a brand new one waiting for me when I got there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people don't realize about entrepreneurship and running a business, and especially a small business, is the amount of cost that gets involved in having to take care of those kinds of things. And you got to. Like yeah. you said, you got to do it. The one of the other questions I was going to ask you guys, and you kind of brought it up, Michael, when you were talking about you know, some of the advice, was how many times since you guys originally made the decision that this is what you're going to do with the company, have you had to pivot in one way or another from what your original vision was?
Yeah, I don't think we've had to really pivot hard from the original vision. Would you say, Mike? You know, especially with the undertaking of this building, we've mm-hmm. added a lot of levels mm-hmm. To handle Ben. But as far as pivoting from the original goal of Handle Ben, which was, you know, make a product that brings people together, mm-hmm. Maybe make a product that gets people to put their phone down. We haven't really had to pivot from that.
You guys have been able to stick with that. But some of the stuff that I've seen, you know, in just kind of getting to know you, and I guess what I mean by that, if I were to rephrase it, is like other opportunities present themselves mm-hmm. and then you look at this and you go, okay, this, we weren't originally planning on doing this, but this seems like this could be a smart move. Let's figure out how we make this work. Does this add to the brand? Does this add to the offering? That kind of thing. Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yeah. I always had got kind of a one liner that I'll give on like when somebody wants to tour the building and stuff. And it's like we've probably 3 times now torn out sheetrock and remodeled, and like the mud's not even dried from the first time yet, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But, well, then for me, that's the fun part. Like, you know, dreaming it up, building it, that's the fun part. The hard part is running it and cash flowing.
It's boring.
Right?
Yeah. That's so yeah. boring.
So when you started though, it's cups, just cups, but then you added, okay, now we're going to sell liquor. And then you said something about coffee. So you are adding things. Do you want to continue to do this, or are you guys going to try to pull back and go back to your core?
It'd be awesome to quit having.
Yeah, like, we need to quit having those for
bad ideas that we just like beat to submission to be good ideas.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, every small town, especially in like rural Nebraska, you know, and I'll lump O'Neill in that, main streets are dying. The small businesses are dying. And I was so happy when I heard you guys bought this building. It has character. It's been here forever, right? Kind of a landmark. Without people like you buying these buildings, they're just going to go away, right? And yeah. did that kind of go into you guys' process or your thought process? Like, hey, let's do something for downtown O'Neill. And it'll also play in with Handlebend. Like, if you gear right, perfectly.
Right.
Yeah, we're kind of running out of space. So we took over Michael's dad's HVAC shop, and what we took over was the heated portion. So we started like kicking him out of his own shop.
That was back in the zero overhead days. That's yeah, pretty so nice.
He wasn't even charging us rent, and we were kicking him out of his shop.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So that's when we started kind of kicking the rocks on like what we could buy in O'Neill. And we actually bought a rundown building on a block south of the Shamrock, and tore that down first is what we did. And then in the time that it took us to do that, we had started talks with the Shellhammer family on this building. Yeah. And so that took 18 months almost to convince the Shellhammer family to sell us the building.
And what was in here before?
So it was in the 50s, it was a grocery store. And it had a creamery and a hatchery and a butcher shop and a cafe. And then it turned into an implement dealer sometime mid-60s, I think.
It might have been later than that. I'm thinking it was because the grocery store was there a few decades, I think. And it was this building was built basically through the middle of the 40s. Like, I think it was finished up officially in 48. Okay. They say they like dug the basement, poured the basement. And then the project went on pause, like during, I think a couple years during the war or whatever, in the mid-40s, and then finished up like 48 is what I'm told.
Oh, yeah, there was a war in the 40s.
Yeah
okay.
Mm-hmm. Big one, they say.
Yeah, that was one of the big ones.
So is this place big enough, or are you guys going to tear this sucker down too, or
what? This one's not going anywhere.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. So for folks, we're sitting in this room kind of in the back, but this building is just a behemoth. And I always try to place myself in like the 40s. And if you look at other buildings, like they didn't build them like this. This was a private project, but it was built to government specs. So like I don't know if it was just like an old school flex or like the guy just liked like big well done things, or if he had like some government grant money or something to work with. But anyway, it was built to government specs. So it's just this giant building. There's no lumber in the place. It's all concrete, masonry, and steel. There's a full basement under it. It was actually the designated fallout shelter for O'Neill and the surrounding area during the 50s and 60s and whatever. So it's just a giant, massive building. Actually way more space than we needed or could use or could really wrap our heads around how to even like the place was in shambles. So it's going to be, you know, well over six figures, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this thing turnkey. And so that was kind of a blessing in disguise of that, you know, it took somewhere between 18 months and 2 years in conversations with the family to kind of wrap their minds around. 'Cause we had like some pretty good momentum on our brand at that point, at least in Nebraska and maybe the surrounding Midwest. And so we kind of painted the picture of our kind of dreams for this building. And this kind of gets into your original question about like doing this with a sense of community and in and air quotes for our hometown. You know, and we I remember telling Marilyn, the mother, she'd be either second or third generation owner of this building. And I said, Marilyn, you know, I don't want you guys to be afraid of your family history with this building disappearing. Like, on the contrary, like, we've built this brand that we're really just interested in telling stories and kind of promoting, like, the best times happen around, like, the campfires and the kitchen tables of the world, right? And so, like, we hope that we can build this platform to, like, put the stories of this building and what it means and what it has meant to the community out there front and center. And so we had that 2 years of those talks with the family to kind of figure out, okay, if this happens, like, how are we going to use this 14,000 square foot? Because we need a fourth of that for our operation.
Right.
Right.
And so it kind of became this community, I mean, at the time, it's kind of imposter syndrome. You didn't really want to look at it as being a centerpiece or something, but that's absolutely what it's become. And it's a place I'm very proud of because of the community that's built inside of this building, like mm-hmm. up in the tap room and coffee yeah. shop every yeah. single day of the week. And that was 100% by design. I just think it was hard to like admit it or something at the time. And I think it, you know, when you're in the trenches, like real time, you just never really pick your head up and look at what you've done. Cause you always got like a list of stuff on yeah. your plate you're working through mm-hmm. or whatever. But
so you guys have regulars now every morning drinking coffee, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, and that, God, that's so valuable to, it really is. To
it's community. Huge.
Yeah.
Man.
You can't really put a price on it.
It's huge. And we go back to the beginning of the conversation. We talked about kind of that era we grew up in when you made your own fun, and like, it was nothing back in the day. Like, I mean, I grew up running around, sliding across the gym floors on sawdust at wedding dances until you literally couldn't stay awake. And then, like, your parents still weren't going home, so you just went over in the gym bleachers and, like, fell asleep under a pile of coats. Like, and that's gone
yeah.
for the most part.
Yeah, right.
But that's what's so cool about this building is, you know, you can roll in here on Saturday night, especially in the summertime when it's light later and kids are up later, but you can roll in here at 9:30 on a Saturday night, what would typically feel like bar hours, and there's like families here and there's a pack of kids running around like drinking as many Shirley Temples as they possibly can, like mm-hmm. $1 Shirley Temples, like eat your heart out, kid.
Yeah, there you go. Like, yeah, we'll see and how long you last.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like literally it's the best thing about like what this building has become, is like that's just an example of the kind of things you walk in here and see, and you're like, this is yeah. something I'm very yeah. I am not afraid to say now, I'm very, very proud of it.
So the family that you bought the building from, what was their reservation a little bit, and that took them so long to give it up? Was it they were worried that maybe you were just gonna like come in and demo and not hold it?
I think it was a little bit just kind of like the notion of change that's always like,
that's what it was.
Everyone's always averse to like change, and then
and
also
you guys did
like,
knock down the first building, so
yeah what are these guys really up to? Yeah. What's in it for them? But no, and then you know their great grandfather like built the place, and it was the prize of the community back then. Like it's just, and it's been in the family ever since. And so I think just the notion of like losing that control and change and yeah. everything was
the
issue.
I'm sure they're proud now. I mean, they're around, right?
And yeah.
They obviously come in.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So Kevin, he's probably, what would Kevin be? 50s?
Yeah.
55, 60s, give or take.
Maybe.
In those times I figured out he's an old muscle car guy, like loves, his dream car was a 65 Corvette Stingray black.
So we were trying to figure out every angle that we could
yeah.
get in here and talk to Kevin and talk to his mom, like every opportunity we could. Like
figured out he likes loves Guinness beer, and like Guinness beer out of a bottle, like rip the cap off, dump it in the pint glass, so you get like the whole cascade.
An old school like, O'Neill guy, right?
Yeah,
I mean, Guinness
yeah.
beer,
Irish yeah. through and through.
Gotta be.
So I'd come down here. It was like winter time, I remember. So it was dark at like 4:30, 5 o'clock, and he was a 8-to-5 guy. He was running like an old, kind of an obsolete parts business, but he had a really impressive wood shop up in where the flower and gift shop is now, and he was building Pittman sticks for old hay equipment, and he would build big batches to order for other supply stores around the country. But he would come in this building and like unlock the door at 8 and like coffee break at 10, lock the door at 5 kind of thing. Just super old school. So I'd show up at like 4:45 when it was getting dark out with like a 6-pack of Guinness, and we'd drag over like a couple milk crates and make like flip a trash can over and put a piece of plywood on top of it. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, watch traffic go by and just shoot the shit, you know.
There's got to be like handprints or signatures or something somewhere in concrete around here, right? For like,
there's a lot of little stuff, like old
family.
Like old newspaper
okay.
stuff.
Yeah,
a lot
awesome.
Of old grocery store like remnants, like yeah. you know, like a like an old sale ad, and bread's like 12 cents or something. It's like, oh man, I wonder if this coupon still works.
Right? Yeah, that'd be awesome. So we've kind of danced around a little bit. We've talked about the facility. We talked about you guys coming up, you know, all the kinds of things. What is it that you actually do here? I don't think we've actually talked about that. So what happens in this facility? What happens with the organization?
I mean, that's okay. I mean, the mugs are the mugs are the mugs, but it's kind of the story of what we're doing that's yeah. really taking this thing you yep. know, to where it's at today.
Yep. So, and that was going to be my next point. So it's the story. But that being said, in order for that story to resonate, the product has to be spot on. The product has to be quality. People have to love that. And you told that story earlier about how you ordered those ones on eBay or whatever, and it was just a bunch of trash, and you were disappointed. It was too much money and whatever. I've never talked to a single person who has picked one of these things up and not thought they were just the coolest thing they've ever picked up. So you have that quality in that product. And to play off of that, what my next question was going to be is, how much of your business do you think, and this is another thing for people, you know, looking at entrepreneurship and running a business, how much of your business do you think is marketing?
We've gotten some pretty expensive educations in marketing over 8 years as a company. Is what we've found is there will never be anything that sells a copper mug like just what you did. Like, you have a buddy over and he picks it up. Like, once you have it in your hand, you have the tactile feel, you can feel how heavy it is. Like, you can just feel that it's built, right? Mm-hmm. Once you have that experience, like, it's a matter of time. Like, it's now, like, they're expensive. So, you know, whatever your scenario is, it's like an aspirational product maybe, but like, it's in the back of your mind. It's on your list, right? You're either going to buy it for yourself. You're maybe going to be able to justify it a little easier if you buy it for somebody else. And that's what we found is a lot of a high percentage of our sales is gifts. But so that being said, you know, in 7 years, we've learned that. And I think is what it's afforded us to do is like loosen up the grips a little bit on the idea of like traditional marketing. And just, I guess, kind of you asked what we do, like our internal motto with our team is like, let's go do cool shit with good humans. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to relate mm-hmm. perfectly to selling copper mugs. We're going to go do it with the copper mugs. We're going to make memories. You know, we're going to sit down and slow down with good people. And I think, again, like back in the day when we got to make decisions, like we didn't need the money, like it takes a lot of the pressure off of marketing. Like, let's go spread awareness by that. Like, I hate how the word collaboration has been like kind of bastardized by social media. Like, hey, mm-hmm. we'll both put our hashtags on this photo and share it, and that's collaboration. No, collaboration is you guys driving up here 4 hours mm-hmm. to drink cheap beer and sit around the table and hang out.
I drink all the time. So yeah. Like, I love collaboration.
Whole new scenery, yeah. Yeah. But you know, that's collaboration, and that's for what sure. we've decided for sure. from a marketing standpoint. Like, that's where we're going to invest our energy. And you know, man, it keeps the stress out for sure. Mm-hmm. When you get to go like light a bonfire yeah. and drink out of cool yeah. copper mugs with people, and like, that's work. Like, that's pretty good.
And that's exactly what I mean about it. So it's not necessarily, I'm not asking like how much of your spend goes into marketing, but how much of your time and effort goes into marketing. And when I mean marketing, that's what I'm talking about. Doing that things, building that story, telling that yep. story.
I would say 100% because yeah. like, we just got to figure out a way to get the mugs built in the background so we have something to physically ship.
Yeah.
But man, like, we're just having fun around here 100% of the time, and it's all marketing. Yep. It's all quote unquote
right,
marketing,
right. Yeah.
you know?
And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize. And I was hoping you guys would point out is that like, you can't just have a good product. You have to have a good story. You have to have everything behind it has to just resonate. Mm-hmm. And that's what you guys do. That was what originally attracted us to you guys. We were working with the Upstream Boys mm-hmm. With Upstream Beef, you know, and they had told us about you guys. And this was years ago.
They're good humans that we've done cool shit with.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. So we got on there and started checking it out and see what you guys were doing and seeing all of the marketing, you know, in air quotes, that gets put out, and saw the lifestyle and saw what it was all about. And we were like, we totally relate to these dudes. Yeah, mm-hmm. we definitely need to work with them. Like, that looks fun. Yeah. You know?
I said they're from O'Neill. You might not want to trust them, but they moved ahead.
We crossed that Boyd County line. That's
coming from a Boyd County guy.
Yeah. Those northerners.
So wait, you guys didn't like each other?
No.
There was none of that. But
oh, okay.
Not at all.
I mean,
You know how it's like kind of riff. What you're
on? No, we were in different like different classes and sports and stuff. So actually, there's a big batch of Lynch guys that we hung out with a lot, like junior, senior year, once we all had driver's licenses. Okay. Yeah, back
these
in high
boys
school.
Are younger than us, Andy. So well, you probably wouldn't know them.
And we even had a hard time calling O'Neill a small town there a second ago. If you guys didn't,
right?
Yeah, miss that. Like,
That's true. Yeah, because O'Neill is kind of. It bats up a class because O'Neill is the big town to Stewart, to Lynch, to, you know, all these little small towns around. Nowhere else has, what'd you say, the closest McDonald's for so many towns is 45 minutes away, and that's O'Neill, you know?
We got like, four gas stations and a stoplight.
Yeah.
Very big time.
It is big time. You don't know.
Wait, how many stoplights do you have in Lynch?
We have one blinking one in
some
highway.
All right. There you go.
Just telling people, think about stopping.
If you guys have any other questions, feel free to ask. I, the only other thing I had down is I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think in your life has given you like this mentality? And I'm just going to call it like this kind of old school, cool mentality, this kitchen table mentality. You mentioned it earlier, Michael, about like, we just want to do cool stuff with cool people. And you know, it's sitting around the kitchen table, it's sitting around the fire. Like where did that come from for you guys?
Matt, this is like my wheelhouse. I love this stuff. I know. Shut me up if you need to. I remember as a kid, like spending like fake going to bed, right? Mom and dad were always hanging out with my aunts and uncles or friends, neighborhood friends and stuff. And like you'd fake the whole go to bed thing and then like sneak down the stairs and hide around the corner from the kitchen table. Mm. And you just sit there like in your little footy pajamas and just listen to them. Like they're just laughing the whole time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they're telling all the old funny stories. And then like
that
becomes like, let's just say that night, 5 years later is what they're sitting around laughing about, telling stories about. So it's just like, it's where the magic happens, kind of the kitchen table, you know? And I think just maybe again, like a throwback to the era we grew up in, like I think we were the lucky ones because we got that lifestyle and we didn't have iPads and we didn't have, you know, we didn't have 14 sports practices a week. And, you know, we had time to kind of there was no unplugging because we were never plugged in. Right. And I just think that's always, as I've went through like the college years and lived down in the city and you get a little older and your priorities kind of change and you do a lot more reflecting. And I think that's the thing that has always stuck out to me like that. You know, I think everybody always looks back at the past with nostalgia, but I think in this case, that's a positive thing to do.
Well, growing up the way we did and how we did it in rural America, like, I don't think I realized it at all until probably I got to college and was just across the dorm from guys from Kansas City and, you know, Omaha. And they're like, they're just absolutely mind boggled by some of the stuff we were doing growing up. Like I remember thinking like I wasn't that mind boggled by what their stories were per se.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well then, you know, I think we did have something
must
special.
Must be something special, yeah.
Well, back to your Carhood story, like that was just a Tuesday, man.
Not
a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, coming from me who didn't really see that, and then dating a guy was like, holy cow.
You can't
I missed a
go
lot.
Sledding on a car hood pulled by a four-wheeler.
Should we ask about this as he's jumping a dirt bike? Three cars are lined up and builds a ramp. It's like, oh my God. You know, just like odd.
Did you guys have Dana Day as your shop teacher?
Yeah.
Actually, we saved his life.
We did.
What?
Matt, Dennis, and Michael Stepp literally saved Dana Day's life.
So he was our shop teacher, and this was a welding class.
Oh, okay.
And there I think we had just got through the whole safety protocol.
You have to wear 100% cotton.
Yeah.
No polyester.
Like, what starts on fire? What doesn't?
So Dana Day was my shop teacher in Lynch.
Okay.
And then their family moved on.
Yeah, so Dana's youngest boy, Noah, is like still to this day one of our best friends.
Noah's awesome. Yeah. Noah's awesome. Nice. Yeah.
So he caught fire?
Yeah. So he is demonstrating a stick welder weld, just a straight weld. And he's demonstrating, he turns around to kind of like instruct the class, and then he turns back around to go at it again, and he is on fire. Like his coat is completely on fire. No, he had no idea.
Oh,
completely oblivious.
And so we just start beating him, like just start like beating his back and grabbing towels and just smacking him. He still has no idea what's going on. He thinks we're playing a prank on him, but no, we saved his life.
He's like,
for sure.
He's like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're on fire. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, no, you're like, you're still literally on fire. Like, turn back around.
Oh man, that's an all timer right there. But we could just dive down those stories, but that's another podcast. I was going to your point of you don't really realize when you're in it how special things are. And day in a day would just allow us to build, especially in woods too, and you know, advanced auto mechanics, who just let us do things. And we had a recruiter from Wyoming Technical Institute. He'd love to come to Lynch. It was just ridiculous, which we still had to use draft boards and pencils. He's like, kids get here and they don't know how to use a ruler, and they definitely don't know how to use a mechanical pencil. I'm like, well, this is all we're allowed to use, right? You know, and the old T-square, the whole nine yards. And I was rebuilding. I had found on my farm an old runner sled, and I dismantled the whole damn thing. So I just had the iron, you know, and I repainted it red after sanding it, you know, sanding it all down. And I was figuring out pieces of wood to make all the slats out of. And this guy just stopped and just looked at it. He goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm building the sled. I'm rebuilding the sled. I think my grandpa bought this from my uncles and my dad when they were kids, and I'm rebuilding it." He just stared at it. He goes, "You have no clue how so many people aren't allowed to do that. They don't get to just disassemble something, rebuild something, figure it out. You're figuring out. You have no clue how to put this together." I'm like, "No, I don't." You know? Yeah. And he's like, "But he just thought that was the coolest damn thing." You know?
That's awesome. It is cool.
Yeah, it was, and it turned out to be really cool. I just redid the whole damn thing. It looked brand new. You know, you wouldn't know it different from something in a store. So
you still got that thing?
I do.
That's
oh,
awesome.
Yeah. Man. Oh yeah, it's still hanging in the corn crib.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah. No, and it makes me wonder, you know, like we've talked about, like the generation after ours and kids today, like what kind of conversations will they be having 30, 40 years from now, whatever it is, about these kinds of things. So like, do they have this kind of stuff that, you know, will be nostalgic and good memories for them and stuff? And then it also makes me think, based on this conversation that we're having, if, you know, the moral of the story, or if we can remind anybody, is because you guys have pointed out that when we were kids, we didn't realize we were experiencing it. We didn't realize how cool it was, you know, until we got older. And then we're trying to bring it back to life, you know, like just live it up right now. Just understand whatever it is that you got going on. Just live it up and enjoy it, because it's going to be someday you're going
to
wish.
I was just trying to get a B minus and rebuild a sled.
Yeah.
You know, that's all.
It's just like you had to pick a project.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's like a core memory.
Yeah, it was really cool. And you know, shout out Dana Day, you know, Shop Teacher Day. He allowed us to do it. And that's all he was doing, is just allowing us to do things.
Yeah, you know? For sure. Absolutely.
What a great family they are.
Oh, yeah. Luke was in my grade. And he's a phenomenal coach. And he's one of those guys that, you know, growing up, okay, you're going to be a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. He was our baseball coach, I think. Junior Legion, I think.
Small. Small world, right?
It is.
Is there anything that, you know, when you guys were thinking about us coming down here and having this conversation, is there anything that you hoped we were going to ask that we haven't, or anything that you guys would like to talk about at all?
Market. You guys want to do some marketing here?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
We're drinking beer with our friends.
That's right. This is how it's all about. No, I mean, I've listened to enough of your guys' stuff that, this is kind of how I thought it was going to go. So, no, I don't think so.
I wanted to ask one question. Coming from a wife, do your wives play a role at all in the day-to-day or business? Or they're, you know, obviously supportive and they're doing all the unseen things with kids and being supportive. But I just wonder if they're boots on the ground at all much or what?
Matt's would be the closest.
Yeah, so
to that.
My wife has a small like payroll and accounting business that she runs with a partner of hers. So she does a lot of my stuff for my businesses and handle Ben. Okay. But other than that, like even more importantly, they're the only reasons we can do this and still have a family. Mm-hmm. So like it just wouldn't be possible.
Just like what you guys are doing right now. I mean, I'm sure they're man in the house. They're taking care of the kids. They're
actually together right now at my house.
Right, there you go. Yeah.
They're like, where are these guys? Get them home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's definitely how it goes. I guess if you guys don't have any other questions, what, like, how can folks find you guys? What's the best way to connect with Handlebend?
Basically everything's just Handlebend. All the social medias, handlebend.com. If you Google it, we're talking about trademark stuff. Like, I don't think anybody else has got a handlebend.com right now. So yeah. If you go to that, it's going to us. So
we just Googled you guys about a half hour ago. You come up.
Perfect. That's good. That's yeah, ideal.
That's good. There you go.
So folks want to interact with you, like, on all the social media channels, but then if folks want to explore the products, it's at the website, handlebend.com.
Yep. Just go to the website and check out the copper products especially that social, the Instagram feed, our team spends a ton of time putting up cool stuff on that. So check that out.
Absolutely.
I'll even go a little further than that, like, kind of going back old school, like, get off the interstate, hop on Highway 20, and
there you go.
Road trip.
Just come here. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Have a Moscow mule.
Yes.
It's worth the visit. If you're anywhere close, it's worth it for sure. And I'm sure if you guys are around, you'd be happy to give people a tour and show them how it all comes together.
100%. Yeah. Probably, especially in the summer, I think people are just out and about more. And I'll bet 3 times a week average, like, just an impromptu tour. If I'm, like, walking through the building, right, like, somebody from out of state or out of town's like, asking questions, I'm like, just come in the back.
Check most of the time, you can see if they want the tour because they're already snooping around, trying to find the copper shop,
taking pictures of stuff.
Yeah. They're curious about all the cool shit that's going on.
Yeah,
like the big ass boiler in the front room that you guys repurposed to, like, a piece out there that came out of the basement of this place, right? I mean, like, there's so many cool aspects and the old signs and all the stuff. So.
Yeah.
So we got to stop, and Andy's got to take the tour now.
Yeah, I need the tour.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I need another banquet, so.
Okay.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to say bathroom.
About that time. Banquet bathroom.
But we appreciate you guys, man. This has been fun. I can tell folks, go on the website, check it out, handlebend.com. You're not going to be disappointed. That's a guarantee. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a product that you can relate to and you can be proud of with what these boys are doing and their families are doing.
No doubt.
So check that out. Anything else?
I don't think you guys
got anything else you want to say?
Just because we're on our home court, you brought those coppers up here, we just want to use them, right?
We 100% right, should.
We 100%
should.
Yeah.
We love it, man.
We got some tin cup. Actually, we talking about doing cool stuff, we've got maybe an opportunity. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but we've been kind of like visiting with tin cup whiskey out of Colorado. Ooh. So we're hoping to do something like pretty cool and big, like maybe in the next 6 or 8 months out there. That'd be
nice.
It might be like next level for us, like doing,
there you go,
doing and, fun stuff. So
we'll, and if we can, if folks should stay tuned, because you guys might have a little something coming along in the spirit world before long here, right?
Yeah, what, maybe first quarter, hopefully 2025.
First quarter we'll have product,
bringing some of your own spirits to market,
coming out of the still we built in our shop.
I've seen it, man. And again, I'm sure folks can go online and see like some photos of some of these kinds of things, right?
We'll be getting those out.
I don't think you can.
Not that one, but they'll be coming
soon.
Just
leaked it.
No, that's all right.
No, it's totally good.
we'll edit this out.
No, it's all right. Seriously.
It fits right. It dovetails into a conversation we had earlier about you like adding stuff. And like,
yeah.
I think the quote literally like 18 to 24 months ago was, well, how hard could it be to build a copper still? And like, we've spent about 18 months figuring out it, like, it's really hard. But we're going to get her done.
You look at the guys on the reality TV show, like, if they can build that in the backwoods.
Backwoods of Kentucky.
100%. Yeah.
No, it's a real deal. I've seen it. Yeah. You're going to see it pretty soon.
Let's do it.
All right, boys. We appreciate it, man. It's fun. Appreciate you guys having us up.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Seriously.
Thank you, guys. It means a lot for you to take time to come up here.
Absolutely. Anything else?
I'll do it.
All right, let's close it out.
Later.